It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
My name is S.A. Smythe. I'm employed by the University of California, and I organize with the Cops Off Campus Coalition on the local level at my campus, statewide with UCFTP, and this broader Churchill Island-wide coalition.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. So just to kind of jump into it, tell us broadly about Abolition May that just happened, and also just the wider campaign that it's part of.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. So we are here, we've just come off of Abolition May, which was a month-long series of actions across Turtle Island. When I say Turtle Island, I'm specifically referencing what is also known as the US and Canada. And so these were campus actions during the month of May. It began on May 3rd with a day of refusal in solidarity. It was the first work week day after May Day, and ending on May 25th in commemoration of the anniversary of George Floyd's murder by Minneapolis PD.
Have you all been organizing this for a long time? Because the amount of actions and kind of the broad nature of them, it was really impressive. I mean, a lot of campuses were doing not only just, you know, rallies and marches, but also like multiple events and then educational campaigns, tabling, like coffee, not cops stuff. It seems like there was a lot of work that went into bringing all these people together.
Oh boy. Yeah, it was a lot of work. And it's still ongoing. So the campus coalition actually came together, the campus, you know, Cops Up Campus, Turtle Island-wide, I'm going to keep referencing to Turtle Island, this coalition came together, you know, somewhat spontaneously in the wake of George Floyd's murder last summer, right, and the Black uprisings that followed. But it also includes a lot of movements, organizers, students, and otherwise, who are working to end all forms of policing on campus or otherwise. In order to get these groups to come together, though, it did take a lot of on the groundwork, which I mean literally on the ground or in the streets, but also obviously virtual work since we're so spread out. It really, I think, you know, to historicize a little bit, came together in the wake of California Cops Off Campus, also known as UCFCP for the faculty wing, but California Cops Off Campus statewide, which is primarily led by students in the University of California system, also California State Universities, Stanford, USC, and community colleges all throughout the state, coming together in solidarity with the University of California Cops Off Campus calling for a day of action on October 1st, 2020. And so with this call, which was a massive statewide effort that also took a lot of work over the summer, right, from May to October, sort of get students, you know, faculty, lecturers, contingent workers, non-academic staff, et cetera, all on board for October 1st, which was the start of the school year for most of us on the quarter system. Took a lot of heavy lifting, but it took off like wildfire once it took off, you know, especially with social media and folks talking to their family either back home or their friends across the U.S. we saw a bunch of people answering the call that we didn't even know that we had put out necessarily, right? Like people seeing the adverts for the, you know, 10-1, October 1 day of action and saying, well, we have police here and we're also, you know, for their abolition, right? We have experiences, testimonials, firsthand reporting of negative experiences with police and policing, police repression, other forms of violence that was exacerbated by police presence on campus and off. And so there were a bunch of solidarity actions in places like CUNY with the Free CUNY movement, Columbia University, who was also, you know, ramping up to a tuition strike, various campuses in Illinois, including University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, University of Chicago, et cetera. And so in the wake of that moment, you know, after October 1st, when we were sort of in California looking out and trying to figure out, you know, how did we do? You know, how did we move and what comes next? That is actually when organically speaking to comrades, student organizers, faculty, et cetera, in various states, we were talking about how to actually collaborate and amplify our movement. And so, yeah, it was a lot of work, but it actually came together really organically. The Cops Off Campus Coalition was sort of formed in the wake of that moment.
Well, this is a pretty broad question. I feel like this is kind of multifaceted, but why should police be removed from campus? And I guess another follow-up to that would be, why is focusing on the police on campus important in the broader struggle?
That's a really great question, or I guess two really great questions. My immediate answer about why to abolish the police off campus is because the police. So since that's being bleeped out, I'm going to say because FTP, which is a part of my, the name of my, organization, the California statewide one, UCFTP, which, if we're on public radio, we can say means, free the people, free the pest. Feed the press, feed the people, plenty of other things, as well as any other things that that acronym might conjure up. We know that the police cause harm. We know that they protect private property. They're fundamentally anathema, we believe, in the Cops Off Campus Coalition, to a free university, right? And so that's why it is a part of our larger demands. I am gonna sort of circle back to the second part of your question by actually sharing what our demands are in the Cops Off Campus Coalition. Because as I was telling you about, you know, how we formed, you know, either in local campus specific ways, statewide, state to state, regionally speaking, there's a Cops Off Campus Rust Belt contingent of multiple states and campuses. But, you know, we also came with our own demands, our own specific needs. And so there are three demands, though, that the broader Cops Off Campus Coalition is seeking, right? We're trying to uphold. And so first things first is you want all cops off of all campuses, right? Even the campuses that we may not be organizing on, right? We acknowledge that we mean all forms of policing and police involvement. And so that includes ICE, that includes Border Patrol, that includes, you know, city municipal police, campus police, school police officers, any other kind of arrangements or a memoranda of understanding that an institution of learning has with any form of policing, who we view as the crisis as opposed to the response to crisis. And so we mean, you know, all spaces of education, K through 12, community colleges, et cetera. The second of our three main demands is the land back, right? We're in solidarity with the land back movement, which has existed for generations. This sort of goes in to our other demand, our final demand in terms of a campus and a community that is truly free and safe for all, right? And so there are a lot of, you know, possibly buzzword type things in there, right? In terms of freedom and safety, language that our institutions, state institutions and educational spaces, weaponize and use the police to sort of uphold, right? We've seen probably, the language of safety, and that's used as a justification for why we need police. However, we know different, right? We understand that police produce harm, cause and exacerbate harm, and the campus community that we would like to see, we uphold and live into every day through our organizing, demands a deliberative process to implement changes to structures of policing in all forms, not just police bodies, to have actually community-based care that is established so that we can actually have meaningful, materially meaningful education. So if your question is about, you know, why no police on campus, it's this direct response to witnessing them cause harm, and also directly anathema to the mandate of institutions of learning, right? Police do not help with learning. Police do not even help with safety in material cases. The second part of your question in terms of how it fits into the larger movement goes into what I was sharing with you earlier about demands 2 and 3, right? In terms of, you know, a free and safe campus, and in terms of demanding the land back. Now, I work at the University of California, which is a land grant institution. It is an institution that is on stolen land. And it is really untenable to really imagine an allegedly public university where the public part is rampantly policed, and also a public university has to be, you know, it's in quotes, if it is on stolen land, right? And so we understand that police reinforce those borders. I have, you know, several stories that I would love to share in a bit in terms of how we materially understand the harm of policing. But we also know that police and policing, there's, you know, an aphorism about police are there to protect private property. But then it also, in the terms of the University of California and other public institutions across Turtle Island, we also see that education becomes privatized. The land becomes privatized. Therefore, entrenching the university educational spaces into a white supremacist settler project. And so all of these things sort of converge and go together when we think about what it means to do this work on campuses specifically, but also beyond them. And so if I may, I'm going to give, you know, a actually really clear example that sort of shows how this fight to get cops off of all campuses actually directly converges with the broader movement, as you're asking about, but the broader movement in terms of abolition, but also the other offshoots, for example, workers' movements, right? Around this time last year, or March of 2020, we saw come to a head the COLA movement, the cost of living adjustment movement that began at my alma mater, UC Santa Cruz, where student workers, grad student workers, called for a strike so that they can get a cost of living adjustment in one of the most expensive cities in the United States. As a response, the university decided to violently repress and antagonize those student workers by bringing in at least 3 different police forces at the cost of $375,000 a day. Those students were asking for a cost of living adjustment so that they could, you know, stave off the rampant houselessness and hunger that the student body, the workers, were experiencing and continue to experience, actually only exacerbated by this racialized pandemic that we're in. They were asking for $1,412 a month additionally. The university replied they didn't have the money, and so then went ahead to pay $375,000 per day 3 separate police forces. Forces include, you know, the local sheriffs, UCP that were shipped down from the Bay Area, and also other legal ramifications that the students experience, especially international students, so bringing in ICE, etc. In this moment, those of us who are statewide, as I am in California, you know, it was a real wake-up moment, right? The people that were on the front lines experiencing this direct police brutality in 2020, some of us recognize this as a historical fact, a resurgence of what police and university administrators have done together over the last several generations. Right. And so some of us, including Nick Mitchell, he's at UC Santa Cruz, Sarah Haley and Shauna Redmond at UCLA, and myself, wrote some of this up in a Cops Off Campus statement of Black solidarity, acknowledging that there was a one-to-one ratio in terms of police repression and antagonism, anti-workerism, exploitation that was deeply racialized and remains deeply racialized, with the very fact of tuition in the United States, in public institutions. Right, we saw that the increase of Black college enrollment over the past 50 years, the 470% increase in tuition, while wages stagnated, was also met with a 340% increase in police and policing. Right, and so we see time and time again that tuition is used to repress specifically Black, left, other people of color, other sort of anti-state, perceived anti-state or threats of state presence, which Black and Latinx and Indigenous people are routinely made to represent, as well as leftist radicals, etc., with the increase of tuition, which Ronald Reagan himself, who was governor of the state of California when tuition was introduced into the University of California system, has specifically said, was quoted as saying that this is what tuition will do. It'll make these protesters think twice. And also then that being backed up by police presence. And so all of these things go hand in hand, and we would be remiss, not just as the Cops Off Campus Coalition, but people who are pro-abolition in general, not to acknowledge the punitive presence of policing, including police officers, but that tuition, for example, also represents an aspect of policing as well. And I think the last thing I'll say before coming up for air is that the movement is Cops Off Campus, but our tagline too is Cops Off Campus, Cops Off Earth, right? We're not imagining a world where police are not allowed to be on campus. And so they harbor, malice from a distance, and they sort of wait in the wings or at the borders of the university. The COLA movement, from student workers at Santa Cruz that then spread throughout the University of California and elsewhere, met up with other movements such as, tuition strikes and other strikes, for example, with the Free CUNY movement and Columbia University, fundamentally acknowledges this, right? And also, forces us to sort of acknowledge that, there is no border between, let's say, the town and the gown. Right. There is no real border between universities and university life and the quote unquote, wider community. Right. The fact that state police, university wide police, sheriffs, etc., were able to descend onto the University of California's campus to brutalize those students lets us know that there is no border. Right. The fact that the University of California Police Department, just for one example, is the third largest police presence in the state of California lets us know that. Right. The other two would be CHP, California Highway Patrol, and ICE. So we're actually working with a border-free police regime. And so Cops Off Campus is necessarily an abolitionist movement that also desists with any false binaries or borders.
Yeah, and I just encourage people listening, if you want to go back and listen to our interviews with several people that were involved in the COLA movement and the strike that was on the Santa Cruz campus and beyond, we have several interviews that you can listen to on It's Going Down. And also, I mean, that was so great what you said. One thing I was thinking about when you were saying that kind of that borderlessness between the police and the university on and off campus, I remember we were able to interview some folks in New Haven, Connecticut, where Yale, I'm sure most people have heard of the University of Yale, they own like half of the property in that town, and they basically have free reign. In 2019, there was a series of rebellions that popped off there after police, campus police, shot and killed a woman when she was in a car, shot her in the face, and people on and off campus, rose up against the police, but definitely, I mean, all those kind of aspects you were saying were at play in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. We have so many examples like this, you know, like, you know, this, especially organizing across this very massive movement, you know, 50 states, across multiple cities in Canada, and growing every day. It's, you know, it's been, there's been just an overwhelming amount of narratives like this. Each of them, each person has a name. There's a life behind those names. The damage that police continue to do is ongoing. And so that is yet another reason why cops off campus, cops off the planet, right? It's another reason why we need to sort of have an eye towards the broader community and community responses. And part of our demands, you know, that land back demand also, you know, attends to this, right? As an employee of the University of California, there is, especially, you know, in my role as faculty, right, untenured faculty, there is still a layer of complicity that the university tries to use to have us be a cudgel against actual progress, or right? Actually something as meaningful and possible as abolition, by roping in faculty to one of the greatest myths coming out of the university, which is faculty governance or horizontal governance, which faculty allegedly share in. And this sort of connects in terms of the work that people are doing in Abolition Alliance at Yale, Decriminalize UW, in Minnesota, in Texas, etc., various cops off campus contingencies, or, you know, defund UIPD, abolish UIC. There's so many names, but these movements that I'm naming within the coalition in particular are specifically aware of the harm that campus police have caused, quote unquote, off campus, right? Or that off campus doesn't really exist. You know, Care Not Cops, UChicago, for example, is one such instance, right? Which formed in the wake of a student being murdered, for during a wellness check, which so many of the police murders that have happened in recent years, not involving a campus, still happens under those same auspices, right? We know that, you know, people call the police to check in on someone who might be mentally unwell or who might be missing, and the police respond to these quote-unquote wellness checks with deadly force. Right. These are things that we see time and time again. It's also important then to acknowledge the role that the university as an institution plays in shoring up these borders and leading to the death or maiming of many people. I mentioned UChicago because, you know, Care Not Cops, which began in the wake of this the murder of a student when police responded to a wellness check. But UChicago, like many institutions, be they public or private, UChicago is obviously a private institution, most of the arrests that UCPD, University of Chicago PD, have made have been of just regular people minding their business and living their lives in Chicago's South Side, which, if anyone knows anything about Chicago's South Side, is a predominantly Black and Brown neighborhood, historically so. And so we're just seeing the retrenchment of racialized police harm and violence that is being done to the same communities just under a different name, right? Maybe it's not Chicago PD's badge, but it's UCPD in order to reinforce the borders of a private institution, which also represents the sort of continued divestment from Black and Brown and Indigenous communities in the name of what, we're asking, right? Allegedly in the name of higher learning, but it actually just rampantly produces unsafety and asymmetrical warfare against the people.
So what would you say to somebody that would say, like, well, I agree with you on a lot of points, but don't the police on campus, aren't they just largely there to maybe stop somebody from breaking into my car or prevent sexual assaults or something like that? Just like, it's, I feel like some people would say, like, it's not even like a real police force. It's just, you know, some campus cops in a building somewhere, and we rarely see them, maybe.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. I would say to the person who, I guess, has like the next level up from color blindness, which is, I guess, police blindness. They don't see police. That is not the point, right? I think that police are not here. I think I would love to like shout this on every rooftop. police are not here to prevent quote unquote crime. In most cases, police cause crime, right? Or they're there in the wake of it to, you know, find the culprit. And even then, they barely do that, right? I don't have every statistic at the ready, but we do have a lot of resources on copsoffcampuscoalition.com. But in terms of sexual assault and sexual harassment, you know, police do not prevent those crimes. In fact, campus police in particular spent a lot of time covering up those crimes, making sure those crimes are underreported when people go to them instead of the quote-unquote actual police, or they work in concert with municipal police to do nothing. Right, the rates of sexual assault and harassment do not decrease with police presence, and so another response has to be required. We need to do something else. And having this idea that police will be there to sort of protect is a vantage point that a lot of possibly well-meaning, if I must be generous, people might share. But then we also have to think, right? Then we have a wave of counter-narratives, right? Demonstrably, that we are seeing a litany of in the news, day in, day out. Or also testimonials, first-hand accounts from people who've been harmed by campus police or police in general, even if they're not in the vicinity of campus. Are we then saying, in this same sort of hypothetical, that police do good and therefore we need to keep them around despite the demonstrable instances of harm that they cause? It's a sort of good apple, you know, bad apple in a barrel sort of defense, right? And it undermines the actual structural systemic problem of, again, not just police, right? Not just the individual people, but the structure and systems and functions of policing that run rampant throughout throughout our world, right? But specifically, we're talking about institutions or spaces of education, higher ed, lower ed, etc. But also in general, in the United States, the system and function of police is to protect property, right? And to shore up the kinds of borders that we also see would like to see dismantled.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. Follow us online at itsgoingdown.org and on Twitter at IGD_news. If you like and appreciate this podcast, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and give us a one-time donation. Sign up to donate monthly or donate through Bitcoin. Again, that's itsgoingdown.org/shop to support. And now, back to the show.
Well, this is a huge question. This could be its own podcast, and we've already talked about one example of this. But historically, how have campus police been tools in political repression, especially against on-campus organizing?
Yeah, no, it is a huge question. There are two people that I want to make sure that your listeners know about in order to I'm going to give my best, but Devarian Baldwin is one person whose work I think really is without parallel in terms of somebody to look into in terms of his work against policing. He has this wonderful book that I believe has just come out or recently came out, In the Shadow of the Ivory Tower, How Universities Are Plundering Our Cities. In this, he also speaks about policing and police budgeting. In that vein, I can say, you know, University of California, Los Angeles in particular, this is like one of those 10 campuses, last year had a $21 million police budget, right? And this year they're still seeking to increase that. But of course, we'll have something to say about this. We have, you know, on the opposite end of the United States and also of the financial spectrum, all egregious, we have, you know, NYPD with a $6 billion budget, right? Which if that continues would make it, I read, the 33rd largest sort of military budget in the world, globally in the world, right? And it sort of surpasses the amount of money that goes to housing, goes to healthcare, goes to the basic needs of the people. And so when we're talking about historically, how have campus police been tools of political repression, I do want to also underscore underscore these numbers, which are just two in a sea of numbers. Because, you know, we're thinking then also about the individual or even, you know, force-wide, right, police forces, and how they physically repress movements, which, you know, I will get to and reiterate in a second. But it also matters in terms of how budgets get conceived and then enacted, to think about how much money is going to these people, how much money is going to these police forces, when they could be going to the actual wellness of communities, right? That itself is an aspect of political repression. It's an aspect of repression to life. You know what I mean? It's an aspect of divesting from the ability of people to thrive, be well, be safe, materially in the world. Another person whose work is really phenomenal on this, and so DeVarian also organizes with Scholars for Social Justice, and this other person is Nick Mitchell, who I've mentioned before, who organizes with me on the coordinating committee of UCFTP. And Nick has recently done some wonderful work with the Cops Off Campus Coalition Research Project, and also is a phenomenal historian of university and campus policing. And so I'd absolutely check her work out there. Nick, in that same statement that I had referenced earlier, that statement of Black solidarity, did the research and noted that as of 2011, 75% of campuses had dedicated departments with police officers. I want to underscore that number. I'm happy to provide the sources on this, but that's a really important number to the hypothetical person that you just asked me about, right? Who was asking, you know, I kind of agree, but, you know, we barely, campus police barely even do anything. 75% of campuses have dedicated, which is not just municipal, right? Dedicated departments with armed police officers. And by nature of them being armed, they're casting a presence, right? They are causing harm. Right. They're policing, which is an active thing. It's not passive by definition, the borders of the campus and the possibility of life and thriving in that space. That's one major note. And by the way, the note in terms of sexual assault and harassment, you know, we have from a report, 2007 report that noted about only 10 to 12% of college student survivors of sexual assault even report their experience to police, which also means there are approximately 90% of people who are not doing so. But even so, there are 100% of people under this sort of sampling who have experienced sexual assault, sexual harassment, and police presence has in no way impacted those numbers. This is historically the case, not just from this 2007 report, but as far as we have had reporting and data about sexual assault and sexual harassment. Right. Now, to the sort of brunt of this larger question about the historical capacity of repression for campus police, the data that I had given earlier in terms of police repression and also tuition extraction completely applies. Right. That was in the University of California specifically. But we know that we've seen time and time again, right? Police that are descending as they descended on the COLA movement strikers, last year are designed to show up, to brutalize, to maim people, right? Historically, that is their primary function in terms of being a cudgel for the university to not have to respond or be accountable to its community.
So just to switch gears once again, let's kind of go back to Abolition May and tell us what all happened. There was so many different kinds of actions that went down. Do you just kind of want to give us an overview?
Yeah, for sure. Oh man, I'm going to try to just give a quick sketch. As I mentioned earlier, Abolition May started on May 3rd, and it started with a nationwide day of refusal. It was important for us to start with refusal for some of the reasons that I was sprinkling throughout my earlier remarks, right? Especially in terms of complicity with the day-to-day violences of the university. And we're not just talking about police presence, but we're definitely talking about police presence. But we're talking about universities on occupied land, We're talking about the exploitation and extraction of various workers. This includes student workers. It includes, you know, janitorial staff, for example, which, you know, UC San Diego and UC Riverside, there were moments where they were being threatened with threatening to fire the workers or to sort of not renew the contracts of certain workers under the guise of, you know, trying to be fiscally sound at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Right. And so a range of workers, students, university affiliates and otherwise participated in this day of refusal so that we could sort of rise up and say that we are in solidarity with workers. We are in solidarity with the Indigenous Peoples Movements for Land Back. We're in solidarity with various communities, of which there are too many to name, who have been negatively impacted by the presence of policing anywhere. And so this also looks like a work stoppage. As I said earlier, it was in solidarity with the International Workers Day, May Day, which fell on a weekend. So this is the first weekday of this, also so that we could link the struggles for labor to the movement. And that has already happened, as I mentioned, with the COLA movement. Labor movements have always been a part of our struggle. Then I'm just going to touch on this maybe a couple of key campuses, because the following day there was an action from Police Free Penn. And this was really powerful because Police Free Penn, which takes place around the University of Pennsylvania, which it, is the largest police presence in the state of Pennsylvania. The largest private police presence in the state of Pennsylvania, right? So they're going up against a massive history of police and policing in that state and on their campus. Then we had, UC Berkeley, defund UIPD, cops off campus in places like Wash U, in the South, Riverside, Yale, as we talked about earlier, UT Austin, cops off campus in Texas, a range of campuses from coast to coast. The No Cops on Campus movement in Alberta, in Canada, who had a series of actions. The action sort of broke down onto, you know, a range of levels, but just to speak generally about them, it included picket lines, demonstrations, banner drops that were really incredible. UC Davis did some really fantastic work heading to the Chancellor's House and doing some wonderful work that is up on our website there. It included, as you had mentioned earlier, Coffee Not Cops and different sorts of either direct action, but speaking to the community, trying to get people on board kinds of conversations, teach-ins with abolitionist speakers, screen printing, festivals, you name it. It really was a loud and coordinated month of direct actions that we worked really hard towards so that we could actually make our presence known, make our presence felt in this deeply coordinated way, but also to make sure that our local campuses were on notice specifically. It was also a way to bring people to the table. And to that end, there's one of many sort of really heartening stories, for example, with Decrim UW, Decriminalized University of Washington, who had an action on the 23rd, and so towards the end of Abolition May, and because of these coordinated actions, because we were all speaking to each other in terms of the co-organizing, but definitely amplified by social media attention, there were other campuses who wanted to get on board, who had done, you know, weren't with us in terms of the core planning, but were like, absolutely, let's get in and let's do this. And so the coalition then, you know, almost exponentially grew. It ballooned. We saw, for example, at Decrim UW, Seattle University and other campuses of the University of Washington system joined together on that day. You know, tripling, quadrupling the number of people that were present and organizations that were formed under the umbrella of the coalition. We saw Abolition Alliance at Yale on May 7th do community work with New Haven, as you mentioned earlier. That was really powerful because that is a university. You know, Yale is an Ivy League private institution, and the Black students who are leading the Abolition Alliance at Yale as well as, you know, all other sort of ranks of people there, are primarily committed to honoring the broader community, right? Honoring a relationship and forging an accountable relationship between the university and the community, right? Between the gown, let's say, and the town, totally disrupting that divide and making sure that reparations are paid to the actual New Haven community, right? Which can come directly from the police budget once the police are abolished. When they were organizing, because the word spread out so far and wide, we also tapped into and heard word from doctors, you know, people from the medical school, who's sort of separate from Yale's main campus, who were saying, how do we get involved? Those folks planned an action, and we were able to connect multiple either medical schools or doctors in general, our doctors in training, to the event that those folks held at Yale, which is also really powerful because it went to our Cops Off Campus Coalition sort of main ethos, but it also showed us, you know, we don't just mean police in terms of our university or in terms of our community, but also have to understand the structures of policing. As I mentioned earlier, the police who attend to wellness checks, who are fundamentally ill-equipped for these kinds of things, right, are often placed in hospitals, right, in medical spaces as well. And so people who are, you know, in spaces of education, but those are sort of intersecting with medicine, like the Yale Medical School, like Johns Hopkins Medical School, for example, where you had those folks represented, like the UCLA Health Center, the Harbor Health Center, where someone was just murdered several months ago by police during a wellness check, right? All sort of converged in that moment and amplified that spontaneous coming together. And so these things have all been incredibly beautiful, some of them unexpected, some of them spontaneous, but through the overall coordination of Abolition May, which was a massive success, we're seeing people connecting the issue of police and policing to their day-to-day, right? Perhaps they're on campus, but they're not really on campus because they're kind of at the law school or they're at the medical school, but they still see how either the profession that they're in or about to go into is made coercively to intersect with the issue of policing, and people are just ready to do something about it.
Money, y'all. Yeah, support the struggle with your hustle, y'all. Yeah, we need enough guns, enough funds, enough weed, so y'all can burn, listen to us indeed. Yeah, get that money, 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 y'all.
It feels so damn good.
Support the struggle with your hustle, y'all. Yeah, we need enough guns, enough funds, enough weed, so y'all can burn, listen to us indeed.
I show you both sides of the coin. We angels with dirty faces. Some say the love of the wicked's more deadly than the hatred. Life's a bitch, so just face it. When out of control, that mouthpiece is dangerous. Know when to put the clamp on, chill out, put your brakes on. You better watch the tone if you wanna keep your face on. Beyond knowledge, that's pursuit of wisdom. Give me the word, God, I wish some dirty tray ain't lace them. With no fingerprint traces, I'll flatline your airtime. You'll be surprised at what's heard on the grapevine. My box cutter don't stutter, sirens bring handcuffs. Believe me, that's no life, times is rough. Your lady up, like Devo. Snatch change from your necks. Flex muscle, got a strong arm for corporate checks. Gem start a regime, black market the movement. Like liquor, eat the liver, we eating your food, man.
Get that money, 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 y'all. Yeah, support the struggle with your hustle, y'all. Yeah, we need enough guns, enough funds, enough weed, so y'all can burn to us indeed. Yeah, get that money, 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 y'all. Yeah, support the struggle with your hustle, y'all. Yeah, we need enough guns, enough funds, enough weed, so y'all can burn to us indeed. Yeah.
So where does the campaign go now?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question, especially because even while we're talking about the divide between, campus presence, you know, between the university and the community, quote unquote, there is something to acknowledge in terms of primarily university or school-based movements may see a necessary dip in the summer months, right? Because that is when, you know, people graduate, people are leaving the school year, and this has been a particularly hellish one in this racialized pandemic that we're in. However, this is actually a really prime opportunity for us in Abolition May, because we've been here before. We know how that works. And by nature of this sort of horizontal structure of organizing between students, faculty, other university workers, and university impacted people, in the community writ large, we are sort of taking the month of June to sort of take stock, really, assess and think about the successes and the ways that we can push further in Abolition May. Because we're a decentralized sort of broader coalition across Turtle Island, campuses already let out at different parts of the year. And so the summer kind of already exists for some of them or some of us. But what is happening now is that people are sort of regrouping in terms of the local, especially because of the attention and the added membership that a lot of us have received, right? And so for us, that is what's next, figuring out how to bring more people into the movement so that we can sort of ramp up and position ourselves to be ready first thing in the fall. And that is something that the university, you know, in general, I think, but university structures kind of buy their time and they sort of bank on summer, right? They bank on the fact that roughly every 4 to 5 years, the student agitators or dissenters are likely to graduate or leave. But instead, because of this horizontal organizing, we're really preparing to sort of dig deep, right? Abolition May, with its month of direct actions, was a sort of broad, far and wide, loud, direct action sort of moment. But we're also now ready to deepen our practice, deepen our coalition, and revamp to agitate in the fall.
Well, if people are listening to this and they want to get involved, if they're a student or maybe they're not, what do they do to get involved? I mean, I know there's like a lot of local groups in this, but are there central hubs that people can go to?
Yeah, for sure. People do not have to be students. It's sometimes hard to speak across the coalition, you know, because I'm like always listing faculty, staff, students, workers, but it is truly anybody who was impacted by police, who wish to take up, this specific cause in relation to campuses. But again, as I mentioned, you know, University of California PD, UCPD has jurisdiction over the entire state of California. As you mentioned, right, Yale owns half of the city. And so police, when going in their spaces of quote unquote jurisdiction, all on indigenous lands that's been stolen, they are still interacting with the university. And so we are all involved in this struggle. And so anybody who is interested is welcome to join. In our movement, you know, some of our key organizers are alums as well. So they're not currently affiliated with an institution, but still wish to see the eradication, abolition of police and policing in those spaces because they came out of those environments experiencing such harm or witnessing such harm, as the case may be. And so if folks are interested, I would encourage them to check out the social media for the Cops Off Campus Coalition, which is at Cops Off Earth, E-A-R-T-H, on Twitter and Instagram. But also definitely check out the Cops Off Campus Coalition website, which is www.copsoffcampuscoalition.com. There, if they click the coalition, meaning that's, you know, sub-bar the coalition, they'll be able to see the dozens and dozens of different local campaigns for the abolition of campus police and policing. Some of those groups under the Cops Off Campus Coalition umbrella include monikers to, you know, defund, to divest, to abolish. But you can check out our page and those resources so that you can, you know, specifically inform yourself about the message and see also, more importantly, perhaps the statistics and the numbers and the actual information with that was sort of done in coalition by people who are better able to historicize than I am. And yeah, definitely get involved.
Awesome. Well, anything else you want to talk about, or is there anything that we didn't get a chance to go over?
Yeah, no, I think that, thank you so much for your time. One thing that I, you know, tried to weave in a little bit that I definitely, want more attention to be on at all times, but maybe relevant to, not all of your listeners, is the sort of presence of faculty, meaning mm-hmm. professors, especially of tenure in the university movement. That is something that I just want to, you know, this is going to air. It's going to be on the radio. I look forward to my colleagues, broadly speaking, to hear the call that they also join the movement. As I've said, it is student-led or alums-led by folks who were recently or used to be undergraduate students. But the presence of faculty is incredibly important to the movement, right? Not just in a sort of armchair liberal sort of way where they're like, yes, I see, I agree partly with what you're saying, but to actually show up and do the organizing work. I think the more that faculty, the professoriate, acknowledges that we are workers, the more the movement can actually thrive, and the more spaces of education can actually thrive, right? The fact is that universities like the University of California, even the University of Chicago, constantly use faculty under the guise that I was mentioning earlier about shared governance, right? They weaponize us into administrators. And so I just think it's really important that we resist that. And identifying as a worker myself has been one of the greatest, most clarifying and capacious thing that I could do, you know, selfishly for myself, but also to acknowledge my role in this broader movement. And so, yeah, I think that is what I want to say specifically to the closing point of, you know, why Cops Off Campus and how it can succeed. Already we've seen really massive successes with Abolition May. However, it's scary stuff, you know? It's like, it's exhilarating. It's like we're on the verge of a shared horizon of abolition, which means that the university as we know it today will not be the university of the future, right? Because the university of today, as we've already established, has been structured in tandem with notions of punitiveness, of policing. And so the sooner that faculty get on board and actually live into this transformative vision, the shared horizon of abolition, the sooner that we can all be about our business and being free.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.